Vente Polvoros for creative disturbance.
This is Roger Molina on Creative Disturbance. I'm delighted today to be talking to Urvi Bhandari. Welcome, Urvi, and it's a delight to be talking to you. Tell us who you are and what you do at the moment.
Hey, Roger, thanks for having me. I am a nomad. I'm an innovation enthusiast. I come from a corporate background. I worked in corporate for 17 years in everything from advertising, marketing, branding, business development, but every single role that I did had innovation within it. About 2 years ago, I took a sabbatical. About a year and a half ago, I started Crush Industries with a business partner. And what we do is actually bring the innovation mindset to corporations.
So Crush Industries is indeed part of a whole international discussion about how we're no longer in the idea of revolutions, where you have the Industrial Revolution and then it works that way for 100 years, and then the Computer Revolution, and we're now in a state of continual mutation.
Mm-hmm. Or evolution.
That's constant. And so you need different concepts in the business world of how, in fact, innovation is really part of a continuing process, not just an occasional process.
Absolutely. I think when we talk about innovation today, it's just a catch-all word.
Yeah.
It's not really just innovation. It's about making sure that when people are coming to their jobs, they're thinking about everything else that's going on in the world. Because when you come into a job, in a lot of corporations, if you have a certain role, that's all you do. You don't think about yourself as an end user. You don't think of yourself as the mother or the father or the brother or the sister, whatever it may be. And what we do is we come in and we help corporations look at cultural paradigm shifts. We look at their industry. We look at other industries to kind of steal ideas. So it's very interesting how we teach people to be able to connect the dots.
Yeah.
It's really not, we're not coming up with the innovation. We're helping people actually connect the dots.
Okay, so I'm going to connect a dot, given what you just said. So one of the things that I do in life is I'm the editor of the Leonardo Publications at MIT Press. And we publish the work of artists using new technologies.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the observations that I have is that one of the ways that this innovation in the arts has spread is by people who move around internationally. And so I remember, for instance, in the late 1980s, suddenly this group of Australians appeared, started taking jobs in Europe, and the innovation actually, the vector was the person who moved. Which fits into your nomad discussion.
Right. That seems like nomads have been around for a long time. We know that, right?
Yep.
I mean, the easiest thing most people think about is gypsies.
Yeah.
Being a nomad is very critical to who I am. It is a part of my personality. It is a lifestyle. So when I'm traveling, I'm not vacationing. I'm traveling as a part of my life. Moving from place to place. And it's not necessarily even uprooting myself and moving myself. It's just being in different places, meeting different people. And interestingly enough, part of innovation, again, when you're connecting the dots, you've got to think of things from different perspectives. My ability to be able to travel and meet people give me the sense of learning new things constantly, even if it's just human nature.
One of the dots I also connected as we were talking before is I wrote an essay a while back on settlers and migrants.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the context of that was I've worked in the space community a lot, and there are a bunch of space people who are just convinced that we're going to migrate off the Earth.
Wow.
But there are lots of other people who think that's just a stupid idea. And I made the connection that in any family, especially when you have 12 children, for some reason, some are migrants and some stay at home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not always the eldest child or the youngest child. And so there seem to be very deep personality traits, and you're a migrant.
Yes. And interesting that you put it as migrant settlers, because I usually ask people, are you a settler, a traveler, or a nomad?
Yeah.
But nomad is a migrant, same thing. Because there's a spectrum, right? So people don't have to be on extremes. We don't have to have the entire world becoming migrants.
Yeah.
We can have a combination of them. However, our lifestyles are set up for settlers. They're not set up for travelers and migrants in today's day and age. And that is something we've talked about before, where I'm studying real estate development to understand how do we create that infrastructure for nomads from a 10 to 20 year perspective. And then from a 20, 30 year perspective, I'm looking at, well, can we build floating cities? You know, can some of us who are nomadic live on the water, and how do we build that?
And what's interesting, of course, since people began to settle in cities, the settlers have always looked down on the migrants and the nomads. So, and you immediately use the word gypsy, which in Europe is an insult.
Exactly.
Whereas in fact, and this gets into innovation theory, in innovation theory, you need this delicate balance between repetition and novelty, right? And it's not one or the other. You need to create a dynamic system which is exploring the boundaries of repetition. And there are some things which we'll do for the next billion years and are valid.
Like eating
probably. And other things where not novelty is really important.
Right.
So how as a nomad, do you look for novelty and innovation?
I think a lot of the novelty and innovation for myself comes from the fact that I'm always looking to understand how my mindset fits into how our society is already set up and trying to find solutions for those. Because a lot of times I feel like it's a box and I'm supposed to be a certain way. But I think the bigger thing is part of why I think I enjoy being a nomad is that interaction with people. Every place I go, whether it's the restaurant down the street from me or a museum in a different, totally different city or sitting at the airport, is I'm meeting people with different mindsets, different functions and learnings that they, you know, how they live their life and how they think. And a lot of times I'll spend time just learning about them. And then that gives me new ideas on how to live life and how to take some of those to corporations and say, hey, if people are thinking like this, why are you still doing business a traditional way?
Okay, so I guess, you know, one of the things that you've articulated is that indeed there's a growing number of nomads, and we're beginning to see the very first industries that service nomads, Airbnb,
yep.
There's a whole list of the Uber and all that. But it's kind of a piecemeal approach right now. But there are other parts of that are feeding into your current interests. As I mentioned to you, in Europe, many university people are forced to retire at 65, and suddenly they have 30 years of career ahead of them, and there's no infrastructure that's set up for that. And indeed, these people tend to be very mobile because they're post their family raising period of their life, and so they can move very easily. And this connects to a project you have that's called June. So why don't you tell us about June?
June is very much a passion project, and I'm glad you brought up the fact that when we talk about nomads, it's not just young people, right? It is across the ages. And so the June project, one of the things that I realized out of it, number one, June stands for Jovial, Unique, Nonconformist Elders. And what I want to do is collect the stories of people over 80 who have gone through generations of change and understand truly about human nature, what really matters at the end of the day, right? Love, life, relationships, people. You know, I don't want to really talk about their business and how they earned money, because I think you can hear a lot of stories in terms of that, but what really matters to them. And that can kind of give us a sense, you know, the generations below them, what we're looking forward to. And part of the reason I'm also doing it is we need to focus a little bit more on what happens to people when they're past that retirement age of 65. What happens when they're 80 and they're still living life very independently and still driving cars, and there's no infrastructure for that?
Well, one of the things that your mention of the podcast reminded me of, one of the channels that we have on Creative Disturbance is called Pioneers and Pathbreakers.
Okay.
And what we're trying to do is do podcasts with people that were active in the 60s and 70s. So it's kind of like an oral histories project where you have the liberty to embed it in your life story, not just your professional CV. And it's been actually fun. We're going to schedule some more. So very often we're talking to people in their 70s, 80s, and 90s. They're often forced to work at home now. they have a studio or they still have that creative practice going. And it's sort of interesting because somehow that narrative is happening outside of of the normal professional workplace.
Exactly. They lose that community.
Yeah.
You know, they're being told to retire and they're having their studios or whatever these individual things, but they don't have the community anymore. And so how do we make sure that the infrastructure either allows them to stay in the system or create physical communities where they can still live their full-on lives? Because a lot of them don't want to go to retirement homes. Because they
or
don't
if they
need
do,
to.
They plan to be professionally active
exactly.
in a retirement home.
But still, there's no... But yes, you're absolutely right. There's no true infrastructure for them, and nobody's really looking at that because they think, oh, okay, once you're old, you're in a retirement home, or you need medical attention, and that's it. But as we both know, we know people in their 80s and 90s who are thriving, probably living life more than we are.
Yeah, and one of the reasons we like the podcast medium is there's something about oral storytelling where
absolutely.
You're willing to say things that you might not write down.
Or video,
right, which, and so the sort of the hiddenness of doing a podcast, and so it's you know, I think you've got your finger with June on an interesting problem where clearly over the coming 50 years we need to invent whole new infrastructures and support
Absolutely.
Systems. Let me just jump to a totally different topic that you're passionate about right now, which connects with the Nomad topic but other topics, which is the Floating Cities project.
I know I mentioned it before. Floating Cities was an idea that was put as a seed in my head about 4 years ago. It actually originally started off as just doing a conference on a boat. But as I started defining who I was and realized that it is being a nomad, one of the things that started evolving out of it is, why can't I have my home go with me? And, okay, if it goes with me, plane's a little too small, so why not be a ship that goes around the world? And I can constantly move, and if I have to travel somewhere, I go wherever I need to go to, and then wherever the ship is again, I go back there. Instead of, oh, Dallas is my base, and I have to go to LA, and then I come back to Dallas. So the Floating Cities is a 20, 30-year project. It is not even a true company or, you know, living project yet, but it's all about... Maybe, you know, there's a lot more people like me that we want a different way of living. Now, we're still human, so some of the basic things are still the same. It's
so,
just that my home goes with
me. So let me just connect a very specific thing that you mentioned on that, which is a no-brainer. So indeed, everybody in their apartment pays 17 bills every month.
Yes.
Now, the only one of those that now travels with you is your cell phone. So my cell phone number is now a California number that I got 20 years ago.
Yep.
I've lived in 6 different places. I still pay the one phone bill.
Phone bill, yeah.
And it, wherever I am, I'm...
It works.
But that's not true for my electricity bill. It's not true
Absolutely.
For my TV account. And as you said, or my car insurance, or
mm-hmm.
my...
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, there are some really easy things that clearly would support people who are living a nomadic lifestyle...
Mm-hmm.
Where you pay rent once,
one rent.
Wherever you're sleeping on the planet.
Yep, absolutely.
And so, are you actually going to do that?
So, as I mentioned, I think we talked about before, that I'm studying real estate development.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I want to look at is, so a lot of real estate developers are still doing very traditional, static lifestyles, right? Whether it's work, live, work, or play. And what I'm trying to look at is, why can't we have groups of buildings across the world that are connected together, whether it's one company, two companies, or whatever, but as an individual, I only have to pay one rent. I pay a rent, maybe one city is my base, but I could go to LA, London, wherever I need to be and have a place to go to. Electronically, you know, I put in my calendar and I say, this is where I need to be, you know, and somebody, I get somebody else's apartment. So almost like an Airbnb,
but covering
timeshare.
All. Whether it's health, whether
exactly.
it's...
Everything. Exactly.
Yeah.
And a lot of... part of creating these... I would call them communities, because what I want to do is create the communities. If everyone is a migrant or a nomad, you need to have people in the system or in the communities who are your social directors, so to say. Meaning they're the ones connecting everybody. They're the ones making sure you have what you need.
Yeah.
They're the ones just kind of running the things. Not in the traditional sense, like let's say we say an apartment right now, you have a leasing agent. That's it. That person takes care of everything, even once you're in. But no, this is separate from having a leasing agent. So now you're creating community among nomads, and you have the infrastructure that goes along with it.
Right. So there are two ways of doing that. Is one by having the community move around. So that's the floating cities.
And
the other is this idea of a nomad contract.
Exactly.
That basically wherever you are, you're covered
by the
support system.
And funny enough, there are groups of people who are already starting to do it. They're starting to do it mostly in exotic locations.
Okay, so we're going to ask our listeners to sign an NDA right now. So please, if you heard this, do not steal the idea.
Or come to me and I'll help you work on it.
Or steal the idea and help build this new infrastructure for the nomads of our planet.
Exactly.
Thank you, Irvi. It's been a delight talking to you.
Thank you, Roger. I appreciate it.
Okay. Bye.
Got a vente polvorus for creative disturbance?